Yes, today I'm joined by NBA trainer Ben Vellucci. Ben, what's going on?
How you doing, John? How's it going?
Everything's good. Everything's good. The NBA season about to start back up. Well, training camp started yesterday, so we back on go again, bro.
Yeah. No, it's exciting. We had this short little window, and we're right back at it. I mean, for basketball fans, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's the shortest window we had in NBA history besides the 50-game lockout a few years ago. So, like I say, ready to go. Definitely ready to go.
Yeah.
Yes, once again, thank you for joining me. Welcome to the NBA panel. So basketball's been in your blood for a while. You played some college ball?
Yeah, so I actually I had a crazy journey myself. I played, basketball in upstate New York.
Right.
And then I went to, at the time, AU wasn't big. So I ended up going to, a junior college in Pennsylvania called Lackawanna, which, was crazy experience going to Scranton because there wasn't much to do there. And then I had an opportunity to go out to California, Division I JUCO college. I transferred. I mean, it was kind of like the theme, if you weren't finding the right schools and fits back in the day. Actually, it seems like the trend now. And then I finished at Brockport, which is a Division III school in Rochester, and I was All-American there. And then I went overseas and played for a few years, and had a really exciting pro career. And that was kind of the short story of my basketball journey. So and then it led me to training. So
right. Yeah, you put up you averaged 22 a game your senior year at Brockport.
Yep, I averaged 22. I was one of the top scorers in the country at that time.
That's
and, throughout my college career, I probably was close to a 2,000-point score, between transferring and stuff like that. But I've always had a knack for scoring and, spent a lot of time in the gym, so I was always prepared. It's something that was absolutely my first love, and I spent a lot of time trying to perfect my craft. So it was a great experience being a ball player.
So you played overseas. Tell us about the experience in Europe and your championship with Iceland. Because a lot of players don't get that dual experience of playing overseas and in the USA.
Yeah, so I remember it was a cold December in Syracuse, New York. That's where I'm from. And I had my buddy, A.J. Moyer, who actually was the captain of Indiana, played overseas for a while, put me in contact with his agent, and they said they had an opportunity. And they basically, after I got there, they told me how they picked the guy. They looked at these old DVDs. It was between me and another guy.
Okay.
And they just thought I looked better on film. They didn't know who to pick or whatever.
Right.
And so I go out there, and it was a crazy experience. It was only 4 hours of daylight when I got there.
Right.
And, different language, different this, different that.
Right.
And I remember going to my first practice, and, I didn't know how to read Icelandic, obviously. But so I looked at the wrong time on the schedule they gave me. I didn't have anything to translate it, and I ended up getting lost on my way to practice. And, I get there, and it was an experience where the team was super open to having an American on the team, and they were super friendly. But I just remember, you're 20-something years old, and you're in Europe for the first time. It was fun, but it was also a little nerve-wracking because you don't know what to expect, but it was a great experience.
Right. What would you say is the biggest difference between playing in Europe and the NBA game that you noticed?
I mean, the NBA, people don't understand how good these guys are. I mean, number one, these guys are freak athletes. They're high-skilled. I would say there's no comparison, to be honest, and I know maybe some people might say there's a few teams out in Europe, but I mean, the NBA level is just, on top of being free athletes, these guys are super, super skilled because they have guys like me now who are basically like their personal mechanics, technicians for all of these guys.
Right.
But in Europe, it's one thing I notice is, high IQ, everyone can shoot the ball, and you kind of traditionally seen that the guys in the NBA, the Dirk Nowitzkis, the modern Luka Doncic's, like they're.
Yes, yes.
That's kind of the trend of European guys is you get a high IQ guy, a guy who really knows how to play, can shoot. They quote unquote call them, a little soft. But as we've seen, they've gotten a lot tougher over the year. But that's kind of, I'd say like the immediate difference if I had to pick is, the NBA is they say athletic, but now they have the skill. European guys have always been traditionally like high IQ, can really shoot it.
Yeah, that's a good example because Luka was putting in the world fantasy game over here, and now he's on pace to be like an MVP favorite for this upcoming season. So Luka came in ready.
Yeah. I was surprised when he first came in. It's kind of how I'm looking at this. The kid the Wizards picked up, the kid from Israel, and I kind of have my guard up as far as how good they're going to be because. Right. You know, it's a different game. They're younger guys, but I'll tell you, Luka surprised me. I mean, overall, skill-wise, I mean, wow. Yeah. He can do everything. And he'll only get better, and he's super young, so his numbers now are scary. What's it going to be like in the next 3 to 5 years? I mean, he has much his prime. So, So it's exciting to watch these guys play, and I'm excited to see this kid from Washington. Denny, I think his name is. I can't think of it at the moment, but I think he's got a shot too to be pretty talented, pretty special from what I've seen so far.
Cool. Also, on your travels, you were able to work out with the Golden State Warriors. Tell us about that experience and who you worked out with.
Yeah, so when I was when I finished my first year in Iceland, I had a friend of mine. He was close with one of the agents who's connected to the Warriors, and I remember them inviting me down. I think Chris Mullen was there at the time. Okay. They invited me down to St. John's University, and I worked out with a couple of their trainers and coaches. And I had a good workout, but at the time, I mean, the Warriors had, I think it was Monte Ellis, Baron Day. It was that
crazy We Believe
team,
We Believe.
Yeah, that We Believe team. So I looked at it as it's just going to, something to add to the portfolio and the resume, and it's going to just help, help me get better deals overseas. But it was great. I mean, to be able to compete at that level and to be around that environment, you can't put a price on that.
So tell us about Belushi's Basketball Academy. What does it bring and what can potential clients expect when they sign up with you?
Yeah, so Belushi Basketball Academy started when I came back after I was done playing overseas. I had an injury at the time, just kind of my body was just worn down from just long seasons, just transferring from year to year to year without a break. And I came back to Syracuse, New York, and I had a kid say, hey, can you work me out? And I had no idea about training. I was like, yeah, I'll show him a few things. And then the next few days, I got a phone call from a couple of his buddies, and then I got asked to do an after-school program with 45 kids, and then, I'm looking around, and I'm saying, like, man, this is a business, and then the next question is, like, what is an actual business owner? Like, I was a basketball player my whole life, so I didn't even think about doing anything besides playing basketball. So, anyways, we started off with, the first year we had, it was just me, taking on all these programs, and as I got bigger, I started hiring more people, and then now we're in four different states, and in Syracuse, New York, I've been doing this for 12 years now. We have about 3,000 kids here. It's primarily youth kids and high school kids and college kids in the off season, and now I'm in a position I'm lucky to be able to kind of manage it more, be super hands on because it got to the point where it needed my attention outside of the court. So, which was great because then it allowed me to focus on my NBA guys as well. So, it's an academy in upstate New York. We have a location in Maryland, Texas, and California. Okay. And what we do is basically, it's a grassroots program for younger kids, and then it's private training for middle school to high school to college kids, and to give them an outlet to develop their game.
So what would you say separates your academy from other trainers? Because there's a lot of trainers all over the internet trying to get kids and NBA players to come to their camps. But you train players from all levels. So that shows that you're trusted in what you're doing, and players want to train with you. And they trust you with their future, basically.
Yep. Yeah, I think what makes me different is 12 years. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. And I think one of the things that I've done, is compared to, I guess, a couple of the trainers out there that I've seen, the guys starting off, is I actually put the time in learning the game from a trade standpoint. I didn't think because I played that I knew everything. And I think that's becoming a problem in our industry. It's getting a little watered down as anybody who played thinks they can train, but there's a whole science to it. So for me, I humbled myself and said, you know what, no one's going to play or do things the way that maybe I expect them to, so let me kind of figure out how to teach the game the right way. So I just asked, you know, a ton of questions to guys. I did a ton of homework. I asked, you know, some mentors about a few things, and I just constantly just, like, educate myself to the point where, like, even today, I feel like I don't know anything about basketball, which I think which drives me to learn, you know, still as much as I possibly can, because I do want to, you know, when the guys leave me, especially at the NBA level, it's like, you know, they have to feel comfortable with going into the next season, and the goal is to have them all sign big contracts. So, like, I don't want to shortchange them or do them a disservice. So I think the thing that separates me is I take the same attitude I had as a player and I put into training is I want to know as much as I can from the lens of, as a trainer. So I would say that would be maybe a little bit of a separator for me.
Right. I'm a firm believer in that. I always say I don't know everything, and I'm not afraid to learn. I never say I'm the smartest person in the room. One thing I always say is if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I'm always willing to learn. I'm always willing to learn and get better. You got to get better. Got
to
get better.
Yeah, that's great. Yep. That's awesome. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that was it. I was just, go ahead. I'm waiting for the next question.
Okay. So you worked with Carmelo Anthony. Speaking of him going to year 18 and still putting the work in the block. Because last year, he took a couple rookies and vets to work him on a block. To see Carmelo tapping the head three times from the three. I mean, he had off the set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when I see Carmelo, are you there? What was I doing with Carmelo a couple weeks ago? And you know, just in the games that he was playing with my guys and stuff like that, just to see his footwork at this level still.
Right.
It's that, you know, like I never forget Kobe said kept him in the league. You know, and was what made him sustainable and successful is that he always had great footwork and could shoot the ball.
Right.
And Melo's footwork, like actually some of the guys, like, man, I got to learn that Melo stuff. I'm like, listen, bro. Melo stuff is God given. Like you can mimic the footwork, but at the pace and the speed and the way he reads defenders, that's his gift, and that's what's made him so unstoppable as a scorer. Is once he sizes you up on the triple threat, he can read you like as quick as possible. I mean, I think he's got probably one of the quickest releases ever in NBA history too. So you combine his footwork speed and his shooting speed. He's really impossible. I mean, he's going to get a shot off no matter what. And you know, you can tell as he's gotten older, he's really just become more efficient from the outside. So he's just, you know, he's got to be pound for pound one of the greatest scorers ever, I mean, in my opinion.
Right. Some of the best workouts and runs get very competitive. How competitive does the runs get at your academy? Because we know some workouts, people be talking trash, they get hyped and everything, and they work out, they aim up to be some good games.
Yeah, I mean, so when I was in this offseason, I was in Maryland for the last 6 months, and I had guys in and out of the gym. I had open runs. I had Admiral Schofield from the Wizards, Thon Maker from the Pistons. You know, we had a handful of NBA guys coming in. We had some guys who got drafted this year, Amir Yurtseven from Georgetown, got picked up by the Thunder. And, you know, the games, you know, during this time were even more competitive, I think, because there was a point where there was no games being played, not even pickup. So when I started organizing these games, you know, I had to turn guys away because everyone was calling me. And we kept it where it was just, with a group of guys who was, you know, really there to get better and push each other. But, I mean, the games are awesome. When guys are trash talking, they're screaming going on, it just feels like, I don't know, like almost like a little bit of like a playoff environment.
Right.
You know, I mean, nothing compares to the actual environment, but just like those splashes of just being competitive, you know, you can't put a price on it. So it was having a front row seat to those games for free.
Right.
Was you know, as a fan, I was like, I could watch this all day. So.
Wow, that's great, man. So when you're a pro sport, when you're a pro sport player, what goes into the process of preparing their workout?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm very specific with what I do. I think that's something that I've taken a lot of pride in is what I do is we start with a SWOT analysis. You know, we do strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And we see, like, what a player did the year before going into their next season. And my thing is, okay, what are we adding this year? Like, what is going to make you really, really separate yourself? Where, and I guess I back up just a step is like, what is going to be your role? Because that's what we really need to master. So if you're going to be a 3D guy, we're going to get your shots, you know, right here. So we get really good at what the role is. So I'd say like 80 to 85% of the workouts are designed for their role. And then the other 10, 15% is basically giving them, you know, an opportunity to just kind of play off instincts if they're in situations where, you know, the play doesn't work or they're in a high ball screen, they're getting downhill and have to create a play or whatever it may be. So we just add splash to that. So, and I always have, you know, 2-3 year plans with the guys to make sure that we're right on point with everything. So, you know, for example, this year, you know, with Admiral Schofield, we spent a lot of time on, you know, reconstructing his shot because he was already a good shooter, but we want to make him a great shooter. So that was our main focus. And then we said, okay, you know, you start hitting a couple threes, you got to get downhill and get into a one drill pull up. So like, that's what we really focused on. And then the last phase for him, it was finishing. So we just spent, you know, a lot of time on shooting. The second focus was one drill pull up, and the third was getting to the rim. And those are the only three focuses we had this off season. And we watched a ton of film. I recorded the workout so we can see what he was doing in the workouts. We even kept stats in the workouts. So it was very, very detailed. Like, we had numbers on everything. And that's pretty much how I work with all my guys, is to make sure that we have a plan. And we don't want to work on 5 to 6 different skills in the offseason because we wanted to get really good at 2 or 3 because we want to put those reps into that. And then it just accumulates over the years. So that's pretty much what goes into, you know, beginning phase of the process, especially with these NBA guys, because their time is very important in the gym. And I try not to waste any time. There's no fluff in my workouts. There's no, you know, clown drills where there's tennis balls all over the place and this and that.
I got you.
So that's my focus, you know.
You have a lot of clients with different skill sets. How long did it take you to naturally determine and get a feel how hard to push and the duration of the workouts? Because, you know, you know exactly what I'm saying. Different players that you train, their higher skill level, some are lower. How long did it take you to naturally determine who and how long to push those players?
Well, you know, it's funny. So, like, with my pro guys, one thing I do with all these guys first is, like, let's go grab lunch, let's grab dinner, let's do something, because I don't want to just go right to the court. Because it's really important for me to have a background of them because, I do a ton of research. I have every single piece of film. I've watched every YouTube clip. I have Synergy where I can see all their clips, so I know exactly what I'm getting into. But I like to really get to know the person because there's so much more about the relationship first before. And that's what gives me the buy-in so that we can really focus on what's next. So that's really important, is that I get to know these guys so that I understand the psychology of how they're thinking or why they're thinking or why they're doing certain things. And that allows me to know when to push the button. So that's where it all starts with me, is off the court. And then I have a really good sense of, okay, I see certain traits and I really understand, like, this guy, you know, this guy maybe came from a really tough background and I could push him. You know, I can swear, I can push, I can bump, let's go. This guy, you know, maybe he's a little bit, you know, I don't want to use the word softer, but maybe he's a little more sensitive to things, and I have to be careful on my wording, you know. So So that's what goes into that part of it, for especially the pro guys, the NBA guys.
Yeah, that's a perfect lead-in. How important is communication between trainer and client?
Communication's everything. I think it's everything in relationships in general. Especially when it comes to your athletes, it's everything, you know. It's hot. And for me, I like to talk. I like to spend a lot of time with these guys, not talking about basketball, so that you know, at the end of the day, like, these guys are freak athletes, okay? Like, I'm just a GPS. I'm just giving them the framework and the direction to what they need to do. At the end of the day, they don't need us trainers. I mean, they do and they don't. They really don't, because they're so good. So the fact that we have communication constantly and we're talking about, you know, what's going on with their outside life and stuff, whatever's going on is super important. And then the communication on the court is they're just constantly giving me feedback. You know, I'm constantly asking, how does this feel? How does your body feel?
Okay.
How did you like this workout? So I'm even learning from them, and we're constantly adjusting on the fly too.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I go with the plan, and some of my guys will say, hey, like, let's try this with this drill today because, you know, like, I think it'll be beneficial if we do it this way or whatever. And I'm open to that. So, like, we're always in that communication, and we have that level of respect for each other that we both know we're talking about, so there's no ego.
Okay.
So I think that's the really, you know, important factor.
Yeah, most of us here, we've all had to go remote. What are some of the advice you've given some of your clients how to get through this pandemic, like, training-wise?
Yeah, I tell them to take advantage of it because you're never going to get an opportunity like this ever again. I mean, hopefully not.
right.
You know, so my big thing is just know you're anxious to play, but, like, just lock in to continue developing because you should go into your season in better shape than anybody else. You should have a really, really strong focus on what you need to master that's going to help you basically, like, this could help some of the players set the tone for the rest of their career this offseason. Because I was in the gym with these guys for 6 months instead of 2 months. You know what I mean? So that extra 4 months, it's, you know, the guys who could really quote-unquote shoot the ball like that I'm worked with, like, they could shoot the ball now. So if we had, you know, if we had 2 months, we would have got work done and we would have been good. But that 6 months, you can't put a price on it. So I just had to constantly remind them and, you know, change it up, give them a little more breaks in between too, like every, you know, 8 weeks, 6 weeks, take 2 week off, take 5 days off, go see your family. So it was, you know, it was trying to give them a balance and I think we did a really good job, you know, as a team, you know, providing a strong balance for these guys during this crazy time. So I know they're all anxious to play and they're with their teams now and, you know, it's exciting. I can't wait to see what they do this season.
Right. In your mind, what's the successful workout session to you?
For me, is quality reps. You know, like, I'm not a guy, you don't need to be in the gym with me for 3 hours to get results. It's like, let's get right to the detail. Did the player leave, you know, with the physical reps that we were happy with? Great. How is their confidence level high? Great. Okay, so for me, that's a successful workout is that we touched on the things that we needed to. And despite if it was a good or bad day, their confidence is still super high. And for me, that's really important. So,
We talked about this a little bit earlier on, but how do you decide which clients you take on?
You know, I think it has to be a good fit. And that's one thing I tell, you know, some guys is like, I'm not for everybody because I demand a lot.
Okay.
You know, like for me, for example, all my guys, they're in the gym with me twice a day. On top of their performance trainer, on top of film breakdown twice a week, on top of scrimmaging on, you know, like once a week. I made sure that if guys really want success and they come to me, like you got to keep up with my pace. And I was someone who was always just no excuse guy, first and last guy in the gym. And I expect that out of my guys. Now, again, they don't need to be in the gym for 2 or 3 hours a session. You know, we can get everything done in 45 minutes if we're efficient and get everything done the right way. But I expect to have a perfectionist mentality and guys who want to work. That's my biggest thing is, you know, guys have to want to be able to work. And obviously, usually it's high character guys because those high character guys really want to put the time in.
You're absolutely right because both you guys, basically you're what you do is on the line because people want to look at him like, okay, he trained with him. What did he learn? And they train with you. So it goes both ways. That's absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you like most about your job? What's most fulfilling about it?
You know, that's it. It doesn't feel like a job. That's the cool part of what I do is, you know, I'm around NBA players. It was always a dream to play in the NBA. Didn't it happen.
Right.
And now
right.
I'm able to train at the NBA level. It just feels really fulfilling to see guys get results and become successful. And for me, I guess the best part of the job is as I mentioned before, is the relationships. Like we talk constantly, you know, we have group texts with all my core guys and, you know, we get on FaceTime a couple of days a week and it's just, you know, they become family. So that's probably the most rewarding part of it.
Yeah. You love what you do. I use the wrong word. I should have said a career. Because if you do something you love, it's not a job.
Right, exactly.
It's not a job.
Yeah.
The 2021 season is upon us. It's going to be day by day because of the COVID. I mean, the recent Warriors had two players tested positive for COVID.
Yep.
They're training back till today. They're training camp back until today. This is going to be day by day, and it's going to be day by day, that's all I can say, because we never – we don't know what's going to happen. Go ahead.
No, you're right. I think the NBA has done a great job of being cautious of, you know, this whole pandemic and I feel like they're the leaders in sports when it comes to, you know, making sure that things are done the right way, because they just get it. And the NBA is somebody, you know, when they came up with the bubble, they were the first in the space to have the idea of it. So I think the NBA is super cautious. Obviously, out of the 500 guys, you're always going to get a few guys who wander off and don't follow the rules. But hopefully that the team holds them accountable and there's no issues. But I feel that at this point, everyone understands it to a certain degree and they know what's at stake. And the last thing they want to do is bring something like that into a locker room. So I think it's going to be, a very successful season despite, you know, this COVID-19.
Yeah, Ben, they're getting us ready. Opening night matchups, really. It's got the Warriors versus the Nets and the Clippers versus the Lakers. I can see the Clippers and Lakers. We got robbed of it. Depends on what side of the fence you're on. Either the Clippers choked or Denver took it to them.
The bubble was interesting this year because – like, I just read something from Dane. He was like, it was easy because it was the same baskets. You were in your rhythm.
Right.
It was interesting. In the same breath, I loved watching every single game. I know some people look down upon it, like it wasn't real basketball. But for me, like, anytime you put NBA guys in the court, it's real basketball. And I enjoyed every second of it. I liked that it was different. I liked the intensity despite no fans, in the arena. And it was just fun to watch guys, you know, go off. Like, you know, Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell. It was fun to see these younger guys get an opportunity. So I enjoyed it. I really did.
Yes, they were going back and forth, 50 pieces of peace.
They
were rocking, yo.
Yeah. It was great. And Donovan just got his 195 deal. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure without the bubble he would have got it, but it was just nice for him to kind of, solidify his position in the league as an elite player.
Right. The NBA in the bubble grew on me quickly. Because for the first couple of games, first couple of days, I was like, what is this? Like, in the first couple of days, they didn't have any sound because they wouldn't have a delay to that to get things together. So I was like, what is this? But it grew on me quickly. Then when the playoffs started, they were rocking, bro.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. No, it was great. I think that as a basketball player, you don't need a reason to play ball. Like, you know, some guys were saying that the fans weren't there and it was different. Like, I mean, if you're a competitor, I don't care if anybody's watching. Like, you bring that intensity. So it was good to see the real competition and the players kind of bring out the best in each other during the time.
Right. Hey, you're a qualified trainer, so you're qualified to answer this question more than some other people. Kevin Durant, how do you think he returns from his injury because of his height? We all know he can shoot over anybody.
Yeah, Kevin Durant. So you're saying how you think he'll come back? Today's trainers are amazing, like on the performance side. So, like, you know, you've seen guys like Derrick Rose and these other guys come back, and sometimes they don't quite seem to be the same. But at some of these guys, they just find rhythm and they're able to get back into the swing of things. It's kind of amazing. But I think Kevin Durant will be great because he's got an arsenal of tools. So, like, maybe if he's not as quick as maybe he was off his first step, he's nearly impossible to guard in the low post and the mid post. He's got crazy handle for his size. And I think he's going to be fine because he's just one of those elite scorers that he's just going to figure it out. I mean, you take away from one move, he's got a counter and, he's kind of brought back that, or I guess maybe patented like the Dirk Nowitzki, that little like one face low post.
Right.
And I just think, if he gets his touches in his kill zones, KD's going to be fine. I don't see anybody stopping KD still. He'll have to be a 25-plus scorer.
Yeah, that injury like hinders some players. Like the, I think the only player that came back that was explosive, came back almost to normal, was Donnie Wilkins. Because, you know, he was explosive as hell when he got injured. He became that somewhat the same. But like I said, Kevin Durant is so tall. He's still able to dunk and blow by people. So he's going. I think he's going to be fine.
I mean, his game is. I mean, that's a thing as we mentioned earlier in the conversation. Like, if you can shoot the ball, like you're going to stick in the league. So, like, you know, at KD's size and what he's done in his career, I mean, he's just always been an elite shooter. So I think, you know, again, maybe he's a little bit slower, but I don't think he will be. But if he happens to be. He still has so many tools on the offensive end. He's going to be more than fine.
Yeah. Yeah, LeBron just signed a 2-year, $85 million extension. You see the Lakers repeating? You think they're going to repeat?
You know, I like the pieces they added. I like Schroeder.
Harrell.
And I love Harrell. Yeah, I love those, like those guys are really like great role players, and I think that's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how that's when you have that much talent, it's a matter of kind of figuring out how everybody gets on the same page. But with Montrell, I think he's a guy, you just put him on any team, he's just going to rim run and do his job. So I like the piece they added, and I say, yeah, there's a good chance that they could repeat. It depends on how, I don't know, I'm curious to see how these teams kind of load up and come back, and you know, there's been a lot of trades in the off season. So, but Lakers are still probably got to be favored right now.
Yeah, everyone's going to be over magnifying all these games between the Clippers and the Lakers. Every game is going to be they're not ready. They're going to get swept. They're not going to get swept, and you know how the new season goes.
I'm really interested in this Bucks team because when you put I think Holiday is probably the most that I've heard from multiple NBA guys. He's the most underrated player in the NBA because he can guard 1 through 4. He's a 20-point scorer. I mean, to put him and Giannis on the same team and you got shooters around you, that's a scary team for me. So I would really love to see, you know that finals would be, you know, Bucks Lakers. I'd like to see how it play out, but I think the Bucks got a good shot too.
Yeah, Giannis is contemplating signing that extension. I don't know. He might sign it. He might not. He might make him sweat a little bit. I don't know, though. That's a lot of money to turn down, but we all learn money isn't everything to a millionaire. So
that's one thing I learned. That's true. That's definitely true.
We saw my heart just did. I don't want that money. I'm trying to get out. Ain't trying to let him go yet, but we'll see. You definitely want to see. You definitely want to see.
Sure.
Ben, thank you for joining me, man. I got to do this again when you're free. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Would love to get back on another call if you ever needed me to. And you know, I appreciate you reaching out. And, you know, thanks for letting me be a part of your podcast.
Yes, no problem. That's a pleasure talking to you. Talk to you soon and be safe.
Okay, you too. Thanks again.
Uh-huh.
All right,
Yes, NBA trainer Ben Bellucci with conversation. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next time.